Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Ann Kono to the broadcast. Ann is a partner, chief information officer, and risk officer at Ares Management, a $2 billion global alternative asset management firm. Ann is responsible for technology, investment operations, and enterprise risk management for the firm. Prior to joining Ares Management, Ann served as head of global application delivery at Western Asset Management and as head of software development for a startup that specialized in building high-traffic commerce sites. Ann has a bachelor's degree in finance from Boston University and an MBA in finance from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business. I recently caught up with Ann in her office in Los Angeles, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 1, people, as Ann discussed creating a culture of collaboration, and world-class IT Principle 4, external partnerships, as Ann discussed how she leverages the experiences of peers in different industries. She also discussed how she balances risk and innovation, how she uses technology to separate the signal from the noise and data, and a variety of other topics. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you'd give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. Fortinet, the global leader in high-performance cybersecurity solutions, is a proud sponsor of the Forum on World-Class IT. The Fortinet Security Fabric delivers the broad, powerful, and automated protections today's organizations require to secure their evolving networks, from IoT to the cloud. Learn more at fortinet.com. Ann Kono, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT. Great to have you here. I wanted to begin with your set of responsibilities, if I may. You are a partner of the Chief Information Officer and Chief Risk Officer at Ares Management. And I wonder if you could take a moment to describe your set of responsibilities.
Sure, I'd love to. I would say that my role is to support all investment functions and literally all functions within the firm. And the way that my role evolved over time over the last 10 years at Ares was I started off managing technology and then quickly took over the investment operations functions. And then about 7 or 8 years ago, with the financial crisis, we saw the need to develop an enterprise risk function. And with that, of course, we started with the operational risk to create the business resilience that was needed for a large-scale firm, multinational firm. And then we added on information risk, which encapsulates information security and cybersecurity. And then lastly, investment risk, which is very core to our firm. And then most recently, in the last 3 years, I've also taken on the responsibility of what we call the middle office, which is the bridge between our investment professionals and our operations professionals. So within our industry, the role of the middle office is to enable the transition of assets between the two parties that are buying and selling transactions and assets within the marketplace. And then lastly, a couple of years ago, we brainstormed on how do we optimize high-scale, high-volume operational processes. So we developed a group called Global Shared Services. And the first function within that is accounts payable. But as we begin to talk, you will see that technology enables all these functions, and we have leveraged technology to scale to make these functions all more efficient.
What was the rationale of having, I'm sure part of it was your own makeup and your own background, but the combination of IT and risk, the advantages of having those together. Can you talk a bit about that?
Sure. We use technology to help our investment professionals see the signal within the noise. And I think that anyone who's dealt with data at volume understands now that you can't look at a Microsoft Excel spreadsheet with 64,000 or now hundreds of thousands of rows and understand what themes and what trends are happening within that data. And to enable that, we've applied data visualization tools such as Tableau. And again, it was helping to move us from a very fundamental, low-volume data analytics capability into something that's more high volume that allows us to get through more data to look at the opportunities within the investments in the marketplace as they continue to grow. And so I think that in many ways, it's very naturally complementary. And there are tools out there commercially that help with our industry. but we need to overlay that because our company is comprised of both public assets with data available through third parties and private assets where data is coming directly from companies from heterogeneous sources that are not normalized, and our team helps to normalize that data.
That's interesting. And you mentioned that this was a new function. And I'm wondering, how did you, in developing it sort of in a greenfield way of doing things organically, where did you look for kind of examples of what to do? Whose counsel did you seek in sort of standing up the various processes and technologies, to say nothing of the staff that you put together in the risk office?
You know, it was very entrepreneurial, very similar to the culture of this company. We always create solutions that are size appropriate and maturity cycle appropriate for the company. And so we weren't looking to create a quantitative solution that would have been appropriate for a hedge fund type of a firm. But our company tends to go deep and more narrow. And in many cases, we saw that portfolio managers or analysts were maybe struggling a little bit to support our continuing growth and scale in our portfolios, the number of portfolios. I'll give you an example. You know, when I started 10 years ago, I think we had about maybe 30 portfolios, and now we have over 200, and our asset base has gone up tenfold. So in order to scale our investment professionals, which are the most important population within our company, we need to figure out how to get them through more data quicker and with high quality, predictable analysis. And in many ways, we showed them what we thought they would need. They couldn't articulate necessarily what they would need because of the unique nature of our assets and the fact that we trade assets that are not easy to understand from a consumer investor perspective. You and I could not buy the assets that we are trading. Our team is comprised of financial engineers from leading universities around the country, and they're quite innovative because they merge and they bring technology and data analytics together. And we develop tailored solutions for our investors.
Very interesting. And I'm wondering now, having had experience in seeing the value in the combination of these parts of the organization, is this something that you would advise others to consider? Is the value that Ares Management, that you, the team, have experienced by having a single individual over each of these, and therefore having some commonality in terms of the thinking and the process, is it something you think would apply across a lot of other organizations?
For sure. Technology can be the spark for innovation, for efficiency. It also helps us remove some more mundane components of our roles so that we can step out of the box to see that signal and that noise and to observe the trends that are really within the data. And at the end of the day, I believe that data, whether it is a consumer products firm, whether you're in an industrial organization, whether you're in a retail organization, is the recipe for success. And what that data is telling you should be the driver of the direction that the firm should be going or the company should be going. So whether it's sales trends or consumer interest in a certain topic through social media, to understand what those things are telling us, I believe that technology can help us to see those trends. So I think it's highly applicable. The company just needs to be willing to take those chances and those risks. The way that we do it here is that we do a lot of pilot concepts. So we look for a business partner that says, hey, you know, I have a business issue. And what we've tried to do is have some rapid turnaround development. I won't even say it's agile. It's just short and quick sprint deliverables. So if a client says, hey, and when I say client, it's any internal business user that would like to take our services. You know, there's something that I'm doing that I would like to do better. You know, do you have any ideas? And I think that we're in a great position because we're asked to brainstorm. Our demand is actually higher than our supply. And so I would get a phone call from somebody and says, hey, you know, I'm bringing on a new product to the market. And in our industry, the new product is a new type of fund, the fund that you would see listed on the market or off market. And they'd say, how do you think I can manage this in a very efficient way? And we brainstorm with them and we come together and we look at, are there new technologies that we've rolled out for another segment in the company? Are we observing trends outside with public asset managers that we can invoke here? Most recently, we put in a tool and we're piloting a tool called Relationship Science, which is essentially it's a very intelligent LinkedIn. When we are doing diligence on a company that we're looking to invest in, we can put on RelSci and we'll put in the name and we'll put in our firm and we can see who within our 1,000 employees has a connection to that company. whether on the board of trustees, whether to the CFO, the CTO, the CIO, to get some insight into what they think about their company from the inside. And again, this is all, you know, public information. So we figure out how to merge potentially consumerized technology to make our investment process more intelligent. And then we're also focused a lot on making our support functions, our business operations functions, more efficient. Because as you scale and as we've become public in the last 3 years, there's certainly a focus on margin and expense management. And I think that, you know, while that's not the top of mind for everybody, we want to continuously drive efficiency in the support functions to the tune of maybe 3-5% a year.
Very interesting. And you've mentioned in that response a couple of different lenses of how you got involved in innovation and innovative topics. One of the things I've always found very interesting in contemplating innovation, which is about risk taking, and then the risk function itself, which to an extent naturally is about risk mitigation, that in some ways there's a bit of a paradox there. There's a balance, at least, I guess perhaps better put, that's necessary in ensuring the organization is not overburdened or out of whack, out of balance in one direction or the other. There could be disastrous implications of either of those. How do you think about that balance between making sure the organization, yours and the broader organization, are taking the risks necessary to innovate while also making sure that it's you're keeping a handle on mitigating risk wherever that's appropriate?
I think that's a great question. It's something that we struggle with. It's not easy. I probably think about it in two buckets. I think about our must-dos, our bread-and-butter services, as areas that we don't take risk in. And those examples may be, you know, our network, our core switches, cybersecurity, you know, producing accurate numbers every day. Those are areas that you don't really take risk, right? You want to be testing and you want to be rigorous. Also, you know, moving payments from an accounts payable perspective. But then that where we want to come in and add value and create those innovative solutions, I ask the team to act fast, fail fast, right? And you create that, hopefully, that culture. And in the beginning, I would say a couple of years ago, people said, you know, I'm not sure if you mean what you say. You know, am I going to get penalized if something happens adversely and you'll hold me accountable for it? So I think that's what led to these quick pilots and these quick turnarounds, is to say, hey, you know what, we can take 6 or 8 weeks, do this thing, pilot it, see how your user base feels about it, and then let's make it a full-fledged production system. And then we create some rigor around it. And even in cybersecurity space, I think that we have some great professionals who live and breathe cybersecurity, and they bring ideas to the table. In fact, WannaCry issue that we had, the ransomware, we actually had a very die-hard cybersecurity professional who was looking at some of the leaks with the NSA and saying, you know, how do I proactively defend ourselves against this, because this, I think, was a permutation of that, of some of those leaked security routines. So he proactively patched a lot of our endpoints and pushed a lot of the protection out Q4 of last year. So when WannaCry came out 3 weeks ago, we were not affected. You know, we had some patching to do on the edges, but we were, for all intents and purposes, 90% protected. And I think that I want to create a culture like that, where people that are specialists within their functions feel the freedom to suggest changes. And then, you know, it bubbles up in the right way to the management team to then make the decision ultimately. Do we take this risk? Do we go ahead and apply these patches that may not be relevant now? And then I also have people that are not even within this, in the right function, suggesting solutions for technology. For example, somebody in the risk team came to me 2-3 years ago and says, hey, you know what, we need to harness this investment data better. You know, we need to harmonize and normalize data to see these themes and trends. And at that time, we were doing a lot of mergers and acquisitions. And as you probably appreciate, normalizing data across 2-3 acquisitions a year is very difficult. And so that's when we introduced data analytics and data visualization across those disparate and heterogeneous data sources, rather. And that came from a person that was very close to a consumer of data, to say, hey, you know what, we can't keep doing this. We can't keep delivering static data to these guys. They need to have interactive data to respond quickly to the trends that are changing. And we moved from static once a week reporting to daily static reporting, now to interactive data. That was driven by very innovative people, financial engineers at the delivery point. And so that drove technology change. And I think that I try to create that culture, and we continue to try to identify people that can think outside of the box.
That's really great. And you've been with the company for a little more than a decade now, and the organization has had just extraordinary growth during that period. And as I reflect on just where technology was a decade ago, very different kind of landscape, much more now kind of available in the cloud, much more scalable solutions. I have to imagine that's aided in the growth. But nevertheless, going from sort of the technology that you found upon coming to the company and the evolution that you've led, I'd be curious, how have you thought about planning ahead of such enormous growth from a technology perspective?
I think you have to be humble and you need to be willing to learn constantly. I think that constantly curious is something that I have come to terms with over time. Oftentimes, I think CIOs may focus on the internal business issues first and to address them. But I think that when we step out and we look across, we can often learn from our peer firms who are facing the same exact issues. But most recently, I've been talking to more people outside of our industry. Because frankly, there are industries that are dealing with much higher volume of data, much more higher demand for currency and immediacy of data analytics. And I think that we can learn from them. And you know, to your point, 10 years ago, there were not too many financial services firms comfortable with cloud solutions or web storage or just virtual servers and data centers. And that is exactly where we need to drive our strategy. You know, we cannot be so focused and so heavily committed to CapEx, you know, when we're trying to drive value and create value constantly. So I think that we also want to focus on what are core competencies and our strategic advantage to our firm as service professionals and technologists specifically. And that may not always be, you know, just managing the mail and, you know, and storage. It's how do we take data and create value for the company? How do we proactively provide consumerized technology solutions to our investment professionals that travel constantly? We're trying to create those bridges in our daily lives. I feel that technology is moving at a much faster pace and with higher acceptance and with more intuitive solutions. And we are trying to create that experience for our user base here.
We're meeting today in your office, Anne, in Los Angeles, and we're very sort of surrounded by the innovation corridor here, referred by some as Silicon Beach. And I'd be curious actually just about your own thoughts about this environment from a technology perspective. It's one you've gotten to know for quite some time. You're not a West Coaster originally, but have been here for a while. And as somebody who observes the technology community, but also hires, needless to say, a technology talent from this area, I wonder if you could just talk briefly about your own experience here in Southern California and Los Angeles more specifically.
17 years ago, I came to LA. We had a dot-com boom at that time, and it's great to see the resurgence right now. I think that we are at least challenged here in the traditional industries in attracting the talent that can help bring us to the next level. And I do believe that people, first and foremost, you know, determine the success of a team. And I'm trying to create a similar culture to what I believe Silicon Beach has done an amazing job at, which is to create a sense of collaboration and inject fun when possible. In fact, we started our happy hour series every other Friday last Friday, and we try to have fun. I think with the fun comes the idea generation and not boxing people in to roles. And I'm trying to ensure that we have a flat organization as much as possible. So I think that we're learning a lot from the Silicon Beach culture, and we are competing against them, unfortunately. And, you know, that helps us to become better leaders and mentors, and also will enable us to attract the right talent. But I do say that talent is probably our most difficult challenge at the moment, is to identify that, and people that can apply their talent to sparking change within our industry. Our financial taxonomy is very different than other industries, and it's not always easy to understand. And so that ramp-up time is steep as well, and that learning curve is steep. What we're looking for are people that are that have a high aptitude to learn quickly, and then also to apply their past experiences to our specific environment to drive change. And then how can they communicate that change and the drivers and the value that we can bring to the table? I think that we're in a great place to right now to enable the company to grow to the next level.
That's great. As you look to the future, say out a few years. Are there certain technologies that particularly excite you, or are there some that are beginning to make their way onto your strategic roadmap and that those of your team that you're beginning to investigate now?
We are spending and investing heavily in the next year in unified communications. I believe that, you know, with our 25 offices around the world, communication is one of those things that helps to bridge the distance and also to enable idea sharing. One of the mottos of our company is that we have a power of the platform, right? And how do you enable the power of the platform? Through information sharing and data sharing. And we believe that close to face-to-face communication is how you engage your colleagues. Passive instant messaging and texting and emailing that we've all gotten very comfortable with in the last decade, I believe it extends the life cycle of a conversation unnecessarily often, and you don't always get the three-dimensional conversation that should happen, similar to the conversation that you and I are having face-to-face right now. So we are rolling out some technology that allows people point-to-point and even from their mobile device to talk to each other, video conference. And we believe that when you see somebody face-to-face, that you have their focus and it's much different. And piloting that in the next couple of months, and we'll be rolling that out globally through the next year. The second and most important project on the application side of technology for us is data management. In our business, that's investment data, that's understanding what we are managing, the assets that we are managing for our clients, what themes do we see in there, also understanding our investors. So that's our client base. How often have they invested with us? What has their success and performance been with us? What might they be interested in from a CRM perspective? When we go and launch a new product, will they be interested in it? So that I believe, is the water that should be flowing through the pipes and enabling everybody to do their job better across the company. And for every upcoming acquisition or firm that we kind of merge with, that'll enable us to have synergy, to harvest the synergies that we're looking for within a transaction. 10 years ago, when we were a much smaller regional company, that wasn't as relevant, but we've changed a lot since then. And so I do think that we need that core normalized data repository for us to all do our jobs better. So I'm seeing that. And then the last item I would say is, and this is where we're learning from outside industries, this robotics and natural language processing, because even within our risk analytics team, you know, one of our recent college grads has built some routines to predict what a portfolio manager might assess an asset as, this artificial intelligence view on things, but then we can use it for as mundane things as processing 10,000 invoices, right? And we've gotten an invoice from a vendor before, and we've coded it and processed it a certain way, and we've routed it to a certain person. Why does a human being need to do that twice? A robotics piece of software should be able to pick that up and say, next time I see that, we're going to do it exactly that way and with much more accuracy and predictability. You know, I'm excited because I think that all of these things can change how we run the business on a go-forward basis.
That's great. And you're a great example of a woman in technology, a sorority that thankfully is growing, was certainly not necessarily as big when you started your career. I'd be curious, number one, some of the people who influenced you were in the early stages of your career to set you on a path that led to the success that you've experienced in the past couple of decades. But then likewise, where you see sort of the state of the union of women in technology today?
Thank you. It's interesting. I was recently at a roundtable with a number of CTOs and CIOs, and we talked about and reflected on what were the trajectory changers for us in the very early stages of our career. I was very lucky to have a mentor in my second position out of college back in the late 90s, and they gave me the opportunity to manage a technology team, to mentor a team that was two decades older than me. So I got my first management exposure then, and my second role out of college, I got my first team leadership role, and I also converted a number of mainframe developers into client-server developers back in those days. But I would say that they gave me a chance, and I think two decades later now, there are people that are willing to give a lot more opportunities to women in technology. So I would say that I see women graduating at higher rates with technology degrees, and I know that we are recruiting appropriately, and all the tech firms are recruiting appropriately. I do think that the challenge for us is to make sure that through the life cycles of women's career, that they can participate and continue to participate at the level that they feel comfortable with. And being able to step back in and move at the pace that they can participate in to continue to progress their career. I think that, you know, it's identifying a mentor, a willing mentor in the beginning, to take chances when they come up and opportunities when they come up, and then to really be clear on what your interests and objectives are and try to drive and deepen your skill set. And I think that with that, opportunities will be created.
Mm-hmm. And Kono, thank you so much for joining us in the Forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Fortinet, the global leader in high-performance cybersecurity solutions, is a proud sponsor of the Forum on World Class IT. The Fortinet Security Fabric delivers the broad, powerful, and automated protections today's organizations require to secure their evolving networks, from IoT to the cloud. Learn more at fortinet.com. Thanks for listening to the Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you heard, please rate us on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Please join us next week when my guests will be Stanford professors Bill Burnett and Dave Evans, who've written the best-selling book, Designing Your Life. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.